Funding for Here and Now Anytime comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
So glad you've joined us for Here and Now Anytime, where we share stories that matter and stories that surprise. So go ahead, subscribe, follow, and share. Let's get started.
It was dire. We had to write our daughter's names on their hands for worst-case scenarios.
In the ongoing war that has impacted so many, we share the story of one family struggling to find sanctuary outside of Gaza. It's Friday, April 12th. From NPR and WBUR Boston, welcome to Here and Now Anytime. I'm Shirley Jahad. On the show today, in our high-pressure, high-anxiety world, a lot of people need access to affordable mental health care for themselves, for their children. Now, one therapist suggests there are ways for some people to get help that may not actually involve a therapist. And then, more surprises from the wildly popular class of weight loss drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy. Doctors say they may impact fertility. We'll explore what's happening and why.
Studies have shown improvement in metabolic health, even with 5% weight loss, tends to improve fertility a lot.
First now, we start today's episode with the story of one family from Gaza who tried to escape the war early on and ended up stranded. They almost entered the United States, but were detained at the airport upon arrival. Officers there barred them from coming into Dallas, where they have family. Ever since, they've been living without proper papers in Egypt. Here and Now's Middle East editor, Ahmed Damin, spoke with Mona Hatib El-Tamimi about her family's struggle to find sanctuary and stability. Here's part of their conversation translated from Arabic.
Let's kick things off by talking about the moment you first realized that this war in Gaza was different than any of the previous ones and that you had to leave urgently. That's you, your husband Mu'taz, and your daughters Tala, 12 years old, and Salwa, 9 years old.
We realized it immediately, receiving SMS messages telling us to evacuate. 2 days later, the shelling by Israelis started. It was dire. We had to write our daughters' names on their hands for worst-case scenarios. We contacted the State Department and the American Embassy in Cairo, and they were really helpful. We already had valid visas for the U.S. We booked the tickets and planned to come to the States for a month until the war ended and life returned back to normal.
Okay, so you arrived in Texas with your American daughter.
Yes, we arrived and the nightmare started. The officer separated us from my husband. We were apart for a long time until they finally informed me that my husband's visa was canceled, and as a result, our visas were canceled too.
What did the officer say was the reason?
First, he told me that my husband had the intention to stay and had quit his job. I showed him messages from his coworkers and current bank statements, which included a pay stub from 2 days prior. The officer ignored all the evidence. I asked about my daughter, who's an American citizen. She has the right to enter and continue her schooling. He said, my daughter could enter alone. I reminded him, she's 9 years old. He replied, I don't care. It's not my problem.
Also, after checking your cell phones, the officer claimed that the photos on your husband's phone indicated plans to buy a house in Texas.
Yes, he cited this as another reason. We were in Texas last August visiting my brother-in-law. His wife was pregnant at the time, and my brother-in-law was looking for a bigger house. He wanted to show us a place he liked, and my husband took photos. He said that the photos proved we were planning to buy a house. I happen to have photos from an earlier trip in August to Spain and France. The officer confirmed that he saw those photos from Europe too, on my Snapchat. Does that mean that I was planning to buy all these houses? All his claims were false.
It took almost 24 hours to reunite with your husband?
The next morning, the officer told me that we were denied entry. I cried, feeling trapped. There was nowhere to go. Places like Egypt and Jordan are closed to us. So I insisted on seeing my husband briefly to discuss options. The officer allowed me to see him for only 1 minute.
The original plan was to stay in the U.S. for a month until the war ended. It has been 6 months and counting with no end in sight. Palestinians from Gaza aren't allowed to stay in surrounding countries like Egypt or Jordan. So what's your plan now?
Our priority is ensuring our daughter's safety and education. We didn't anticipate the war lasting this long. Currently, we're in a difficult situation, staying illegally in an Arab country. Enrolling our daughters in school without residency is impossible. This also applies to my American daughter. It's astonishing that even a citizen of a powerful country like America isn't allowed her basic rights. With the Israeli army still in Gaza and no contacts to check on our home, we can't return until the war ends.
We reached out to the State Department and Homeland Security regarding your case. They said that when visas are cancelled, it's final. The decision to deny entry was made by an officer on the spot. Have any American agencies reached out to you or offered assistance in obtaining new visas?
No one reached out. We hired a lawyer to handle our case. When we were at the Dallas airport, they gave us my statement, but refused to give us my husband's statement. They also didn't respond to our lawyer's request to provide us with my husband's statement. And the embassy in Cairo told us they sympathize with our situation, and we wish they could help, but they can't give us a visa due to the risk of denial upon re-entry to the U.S.
Thank you for talking to us, Mona.
We have more personal stories, historical and political perspectives of the war at our website, hereandnow.org. Also, we have more views and analysis at npr.org/Mideast Updates. Coming up next, the need for mental health care is so big, but when do you actually need a therapist? We'll explore that in a moment. Stay with us.
Listen to Embedded for moments that stay with you.
I could smell the smoke. I could smell the dust.
Voices that resonate. Stories that change the way you think about your life.
How did we get here?
The Embedded podcast is NPR's home for original documentary series. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Carvana, on a mission to make car buying more convenient and affordable than ever before. In minutes, you can browse thousands of options under $20,000. Visit Carvana.com or download the app today to get started.
Taylor Swift has dropped a new album. She is the biggest pop star in the world, and everything she does makes news.
I gasped. I was like, oh my God, I've been there, and you can identify with it.
For a breakdown of Taylor Swift and her new album, The Tortured Poets Department, listen to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.
We've heard over and over, you can repeat after me, since the pandemic, mental health issues like anxiety and depression have been rising, especially in kids. And we've also been hearing about how important therapy is, and a new development, online therapy. A famous swimmer does it. But does everyone really need therapy? Our next guest says no, and she would stand to benefit with more patience. Now, we rush to say, if you're feeling very dark thoughts like hurting yourself, oh yes, seek help. But there are more choices out there than the traditional therapist, as we're going to hear from Dr. Emily Edlin, a clinical psychologist and co-host of the Psychologist Off the Clock podcast. She wrote a column for the Washington Post titled, Not Everyone Needs Therapy. Emily, doctor, it's a wide-ranging article, as we're going to hear, but that headline alone, I'm just wondering, was there shock in response?
I did get some negative feedback for sure, yeah. Right off the bat. I think it's it feels counterintuitive to, I think, how we've been trained as a society to think about therapy. Yeah.
Well, this is heretical to some people. You know, you have to go see a therapist. And so let's just get some definitions out of the way. You've told us a therapist, a talk therapist, is someone who literally does talk to you and tries to get you maybe through an impasse by you speaking to them and hearing yourself talk, and they nudge you along the way. But the goal is to get through that impasse. Then there's psychoanalysis. That's the image a lot of people have, that you're lying on a couch, and it's a very deep process. Somebody who has a higher training. And it can sometimes be, you know, days in a row where you are plumbing your past. But who is it that needs to see a therapist? And you say many people do.
We use the term significant impairment in functioning as one of the criterion that needs to be met for a diagnosis. And that really refers to something not working well in life, whether that's unable to perform at work, having really unhealthy, damaging personal relationships, or not being able to do your daily activities regularly, like get out of bed.
Yeah. And there's another thinking about therapy, which ties into a lot of 12-step group work, you know, addiction work, which is that talk therapy is about trying to figure out if there's something in your past that's maybe impacting you now. Is that something that's valuable from therapy, trying to, in talking about how you feel, realize that maybe there's something impeding you from the past? It's not just that you're working too hard.
Right. Well, we all carry patterns with us from our youngest years, and a lot of those come to fruition in our adulthood in ways that can be surprising. And so I think it can be really useful. And that is part of therapy that can't be replicated elsewhere, in my mind, that there's someone else helping you, a neutral, objective person helping you put together pieces that are threads through your life that may be part of a dysfunctional pattern.
Right. But here's where we come to the thinking that, you know, yes, if you need that, great, but not everybody needs that. But it always should be about setting a goal, you know, what you want to achieve in therapy and moving on, or understanding that you don't need to go to therapy. You can do what? Talk about some of the coping skills that you say might even be better for some people, things they can do for themselves to move on.
We are living in a time of unprecedented access to support and resources that we just didn't have before. So I think it's actually a really exciting time to feel empowered to not need to go to a therapist's office necessarily. You know, groups can be more powerful than individual therapy when you're managing a really difficult life situation such as grief. I think that even podcast episodes can be really helpful in understanding therapeutic concepts or ways to promote our own personal growth in areas that are important to us. I mean, we have more access to experts than ever before, and it's free.
Well, you mentioned the psychology podcast, All in the Mind. You talk about mental health and meditation apps, Calm, Insight Timer, those that label emotions, how we feel. There's workbooks. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I think this is actually really exciting too. So we, you know, for decades, certain approaches have been studied. Cognitive behavioral therapy and acceptance and commitment therapy are two of the most well-supported therapy interventions. But I have to tell you, they are not rocket science. They're actually pretty easy to use and learn. And so there are these workbooks that have been created by experts in the field. And some of them are more general, such as ACT IV anxiety, whereas others are really specific. And so I think if you just do a search, it's worth trying to do some of these workbooks on your own to learn skills.
You also say read memoirs of people who have, you know, expressed the same challenges you are undergoing. That helps. Join community groups. There's all sorts of 12-step groups and groups that are addressing the same kinds of emotions that you may have. And you're saying all of this not because you don't want people to get help, you want them to get the right help, because there's thinking now, we understand, that sometimes for some people, being in talk therapy and thinking this is something you have to do your whole life can backfire in that it can reinforce the problem you keep talking about.
Absolutely. I think if there's not forward movement in therapy, it's not benefiting. And I have had this talk with my own clients when I see a major plateau. Maybe we've worked together for a long time and there has been progress and improvement, and then it's plateauing. It's not a good use of time or resources. I mean, we also know that there's a shortage of mental health providers and long waiting lists right now. And I really want to make sure that the people who need it most are able to get into the services.
Right, because again, we want to reinforce, you say, throughout, you know, if you're feeling you need to harm yourself or you just want to exit this stage, you need help. And you're not saying that's not true, and it's certainly not true even on a lesser level that people don't need help. They might need a therapist, but these are alternatives, especially, you know, therapy is often expensive, not covered by many insurance plans. And you say sometimes consider a coach instead of a therapist. Mm-hmm. Obviously they're not licensed therapists, but what would a coach do? Yeah.
So I think, you know, we have parenting coaches, career coaches who will be more specific. If you're feeling really stuck in your professional life or you're really struggling in your family life, there are ways that you can narrowly focus on that that doesn't require therapy. You're not suffering on an individual level in a way that's getting in the way of your life, but you would like these parts of your life to be better or to improve. And so I think coaches can offer that. Now, therapists can be coaches and offer coaching services, but coaches don't have to be therapists.
Right. Look, you say this is all about recognizing that certain feelings, you know, anxiety, they're sometimes good for you. They're part mm-hmm. of your growth. You say it's like digging. It's, again, not if you absolutely know you have a problem. You need someone to help you with that digging. But a therapist can help when it's hard to grab the shovel to start. I love that phrase. They'll help you with that digging. But it is sometimes a good thing for you to do.
Absolutely. And I worry in our current culture, there's this wellness movement and wellness industry that's feeding us this message that we're supposed to feel good or be happy all the time. And that is actually not emotional health. Emotional health is being able to really feel a range of emotions and cope with them.
Dr. Emily Edlin, clinical psychologist, co-host of the Psychologist Off the Clock podcast. That's another one you could listen to. Emily, doctor, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Robin.
If you have any questions about mental health, stories you'd like to hear, or subjects you'd like to hear explored, let us know by clicking the link in the description in our podcast show notes. Up next, are weight loss drugs also offering a fertility boost? Actually, it may be the weight loss itself that's the key to making that happen. And then on the flip side, surprise! For those trying not to get pregnant, weight loss drugs also seem to make birth control pills less effective. Robin Young talks with an endocrinologist about all of that in just a moment.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
The Indicator from Planet Money is a daily podcast that helps you make sense of what's happening in the economy. And video games are a growing slice of that economy, with billions of people around the world identifying as gamers. That's why we're dedicating a week-long series to the growing business of video games. Listen to the Indicator for Planet Money podcast on NPR.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beat. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
Do you ever wish you could get your stories in 3 hours rather than 3 minutes? Or maybe you're sick of doom scrolling, getting your news in bits and pieces. That is where Embedded comes in. We bring you documentary series that will change the way you think about things. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
You've no doubt heard about the class of drugs called GLP-1, first used to treat diabetes and then approved for weight loss as well. Much discussion about that. But if you've spent time on social media, you know that people who've had trouble getting pregnant are making other claims about Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, and others.
I got pregnant on a GLP-1. Yes, I was taking semaglutide, which is also known as Ozempic, and I got pregnant.
Here we are. Here to say I'm 18 weeks pregnant. Baby girl and I are doing great. I stopped the medication at 3 weeks when I found out I was pregnant.
In some cases, these people hadn't been able to get pregnant even after infertility treatments. And it turns out doctors are noting this as well. Dr. Neha Lalani is an endocrinologist with Blue Bonnet Diabetes and Endocrinology in Westlake Hills, Texas. Dr. Lalani, have you actually seen a woman who's had this happen?
Yes, I have.
And what do they say?
I mean, they are happy they are pregnant, but also they want to be cautious, so they are monitored more closely by their OBGYN.
Right.
We have seen similar phenomena with other weight loss medications in the past as well, but with Ozempic and Mounjaro being more potent than the other weight loss medications, we are seeing it more frequently.
Because we're understanding that doctors like you think that this isn't perhaps some sort of magic drug, it's the weight loss.
Yes, most likely it is the weight loss. A lot of cases of idiopathic infertility, meaning infertility without any clear reason, is because the women are not ovulating predictably. And that is generally related to underlying poor metabolic health. And studies have shown that improvement in metabolic health, even with 5% weight loss, with lifestyle or any weight loss medications, tends to improve fertility a lot. So I think the phenomena we are seeing is because of the weight loss and improvement in metabolic health, which is being helped with medications like Ozempic.
Yeah. And you know, for some who are fighting obesity, obesity, we understand, is considered a state of inflammation. And so by reducing that inflammation through weight loss, it can enhance fertility. It's also not just getting rid of the weight, it's getting rid of the inflammation.
You're absolutely right. So it's not just the weight, it's not just the blood sugar, it is the inflammation in your body because of poor metabolic health.
Well, there seems to be another storyline here having to do with birth control pills. How do drugs like Ozempic and weight loss intersect with the use of birth control pills?
So far, we don't have any research data about Ozempic or Wegovy causing failure of birth control pills. But there is some data about Mounjaro or tirzepatide causing failure of birth control pills. That is because that is the strongest medication to decrease the speed at which the stomach empties, which causes the birth control pills to not be absorbed consistently, which is resulting in failure of birth control pills. And also with enhanced fertility, it's resulting in surprise babies. But with the same mechanism, you could argue that patients on Ozempic or Wegovy could have similar outcomes as well.
Well, let me make sure we've got this, because this is so fascinating. So these drugs, the weight loss drugs, what they do is they slow down digestion. So you've got food longer in your stomach, you feel fuller, you're not as likely to eat. But it could also slow down the spread of the birth control pill to where it's supposed to go?
So these medications don't exactly slow down digestion, but they slow down the speed with which your stomach moves. So yes, you will be fuller sooner, you'll be fuller for longer. And for this reason, the medications would not absorb like how they should.
The birth control pills don't get absorbed the way they should.
Yes.
Oh, man. This drug, this class of drugs, we should say, the GLP-1, keeps on having these interesting ramifications. But doctor, how far would you take this? Would you tell women who are on birth control and don't want to get pregnant that maybe they shouldn't take these weight loss drugs because those birth control pills won't work as well? Would you tell women who are desperately trying to get pregnant to maybe take these drugs to lose weight to get pregnant? How far are you willing to go now?
So the current recommendation is to stop these medications 2 months before you start to try to get pregnant. But while you're on these medications, we recommend you to use an additional method of contraception.
Yeah, and that will prevent a surprise pregnancy. But also, are you concerned about the interference of these drugs, Wegovy, you know, the other weight loss drugs, with a pregnancy that's wanted? I mean, could they be harmful?
So we do not have a lot of human data about this. Apparently, there is a study that is going on about Mounjaro and the outcomes of pregnancy, which will be out in 2027. But so far, the animal studies have shown a decrease in birth weight in babies, decreased maternal weight gain, and some skeletal malformations in the animal babies. But we don't have human data.
Well, and we should say that companies like Novo Nordisk, they make Ozempic and Wegovy. They say it's not clear that their medications are safe for pregnant people. And they're saying stop taking them at least 2 months before trying to become pregnant.
That's right. As soon as you find out you're pregnant, stop the medication right away and talk to your healthcare provider.
Yeah.
And during pregnancy, of course, most women tend to be very cautious because of the baby, and they tend to follow everything that we say. It's after delivery that, you know, the challenges come back.
Well, and down the road, when you've got this beautiful baby you didn't expect, and you have the health issues of weight, you can go back on them.
After breastfeeding is done.
Right. Wow, what do you think of all of this? You know, I'm sure you've seen a lot as an endocrinologist. This is a new wrinkle.
Yeah, but I think it is awesome that we have such good medications. It's just that the science is ever evolving, and at this time, we need to be cautious.
Because you are one of the people, I mean, when I said that these weight loss drugs have had some, you know, raised some concerns. You know, the concerns are that many people who are taking them are just trying to get skinny and lose maybe 10 pounds. And these drugs are not as available because of that for people with diabetes or for people with morbid obesity who really need these drugs for weight loss. But it sounds like you're saying the people who are taking it for severe weight problems, you sound pretty happy about that.
Yes, I mean, prevention is better than cure, and these medications are approved for weight loss. Of course, not Ozempic, but Wegovy, and not Mounjaro, but Zepbound. And really, if somebody is morbidly obese or obese, they are on their path to develop type 2 diabetes if they don't take care of it right there and then. Yeah. So I am happy about, you know, patients taking these medications when indicated. Of course, patients who are taking these medications without indication, that's a gray area. Of course, we don't prescribe to those patients. But yes, it has resulted in shortage of these medications for patients who actually need them.
Yeah. And we want to underscore both the company labels and doctors like you say if people are trying to get pregnant, we mentioned fertility treatments, make sure you are off these weight loss drugs, you know, a couple months before you start to do that. Dr. Neha Lalani, endocrinologist with Bluebonnet Diabetes and Endocrinology in Westlake Hills, Texas. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Our show comes to you thanks to the team behind Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. Today's stories are produced by Ahmed Daman, Ashley Locke, Karen Miller-Metzen, and Samantha Rafelson. Our editors are Todd Munt, Micaela Rodriguez, Michael Scotto, and Kat Welsh. Technical directors are Mike Moschetto and Caleb Green. Mike Moschetto, Max Liebman, and Chris Bentley created the theme music. Our digital producers are Allison Hagen and Grace Griffin. And the executive producer of Here and Now is Carlene Watson. I'm Shirley Jihad. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. If you've never donated to the NPR network before, that's okay. Public radio is available to everyone for free. But we do rely on listener support from those who are able to give. So join the community of supporters for Public Media Giving Days, coming up on May 1st and 2nd. Please give at donate.npr.org, and thank you.
The Indicator from Planet Money is all in on video games. Not just because they're a fun hobby. Video games are one of the fastest-growing businesses worldwide, worth more than the film and music industries combined.
We're seeing some games that are really taking, $500 million to make.
We're taking a week-long look at the video game industry. Listen to the Indicator from Planet Money podcast on NPR.
Hey, I hear you have a birthday coming up. Yeah, you. If you're listening to this, that means you have a birthday coming up eventually. And here at Life Kit, we want it to be a special one.
Magic can happen and good luck can happen and serendipity can happen if we're open to it.
How to have a good birthday, even if you're not a birthday person. That's on the Life Kit podcast from NPR.